Coming up on today's episode, Cybertruck has some new cool numbers that have come in that are worth talking about. Old school roadsters are getting some love, and SpaceX lands another landing on the anniversary of not doing so. Let's get ludicrous. Welcome to Our Ludicrous Future. This is the podcast where we talk about all the cool future stuff that's happening today that's going to make tomorrow cool. I'm Joe Scott from the Answers with Joe YouTube channel. With me is Tim Dodd.
Hi, it's me, Tim Dodd, the everyday astronaut from space. And with us is Ben.
What's up, guys? It's Ben Sullins from Teslanomics in my new studio, and hopefully things are going to go better this time.
Yeah, this is take 2.5-ish. Does
my shirt really match the background that much? Like, just floating?
Yeah.
If I, like...
It's not like you're just a floating beard or anything, but...
yeah. If you're watching, or if you're listening, you might as well tune into YouTube real quick and double check. Ben is not actually being... This is not monochrome, basically. This is... Ben just matches his background perfectly. Beige.
You know,
beige on beige on beige.
It's a symmetry, congruence. It's important. You know, we make sure that these things... Are happening here.
Is it beige or gray?
Yeah. Tell us.
Is khaki a color or a material?
Right. Or a lifestyle?
Three guys discussing color. That's
debate.
That's going to make for a great podcast.
Yeah.
Especially the audio version.
Well, there's not much else to talk about this week. So, you know, we got
to
find
something
here. To
be honest, we actually took a week off. First off, sorry to those of you that were wondering where we were. We didn't really remind people that in the United States it was a holiday. And all of us were either traveling or with our families for Thanksgiving. So sorry for not having an episode last week, but hi, we're back. I don't know.
Hello.
Where was it going?
How y'all survived without us?
And for me, I had like family for Thanksgiving, so that was a mess and just a zoo. And then I had family coming in after Thanksgiving. They're actually still in town. So it's been like 2 full weeks. So I'm like itching to get back to making videos. And I also moved studios during that process as well. So it's just a mess over here. Did you guys stay in town for Thanksgiving, or did you head out, or what did you do?
Did I?
Yeah, I was out of town.
Was I in town the whole time? I don't remember. I think so.
Wait, were you in LA? You did a thing.
Yeah, but that was before Thanksgiving, because that was you guys were there too.
That's right.
It actually feels like not a lot really honestly happened since Cybertruck. A Cybertruck kind of changed the world, I'm just going to say.
Kind of sucked all the oxygen out of the...
How do you guys feel about it now? Does it feel any different? I know we all were like, what? You know, Tim posted a picture of a trash can. People got all mad. Like, what? How are you feeling, 2 weeks on?
I want to hear Joe's thoughts first, because I've got some opinions.
I just think it's funny how quickly everybody kind of got used to it, you know? I mean, even us, like, the night of... We were all driving around looking for food, and the only place that was open was a Taco Bell. We were all just like, this is so crazy and so weird, and this is no way this is going to work, and, you know, and then like the next day we're going, well,
yeah.
You know, and then just a few days later, it's like, well, I mean, I don't know, mate. Yeah, sort of. I still look forward to seeing him on the road. It's going to be a trippy scene.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you guys have conversations with like, well, how about, I guess I'll talk about my experience too. It's very similar. I went from like, no way, like this is actually just straight up bad, to already basically flipping and starting to think that other vehicles look really dumb. Like it, I think, I don't know if it looks that to me. Okay. It looks coolish. It's not like a great design in my opinion. It looks still very weird. I would love some better, like additional styling or other styling cues, but what it did for sure is it like reset our standard, like it hit the reset button on what a truck is. And now I literally am looking at other trucks that I used to think were like fine. I guess that none of them were anything particularly cool in the first place, in my opinion, but I look at them and they just look old.
Mm.
They just look really old. Mm-hmm. Like Ben, I watched your video about the F-150 comparison. And the picture of the F-150 up there on the screen just looks like,
yeah,
what is this? Looks like it came from 94, you know, and like it looks like it hasn't changed at all from the truck my grandpa drove.
Yeah, it's always very subtle. In order for them to make a big design change, it'll take 7 to 10 years, right? Because they have to just slowly adjust. Otherwise, people, it'll be like a, you know, a revolt. It's funny that people gave me crap about that thumbnail because that was a picture of a Ford Raptor, not the one I actually used to compare. And my whole thing was like, I just want the kind of coolest looking shot of a Ford I can get. Yeah. Like, who cares which model it is, right? It's, they're all basically the same anyways. The Ford Raptor is like, you know, the fast, fun one, but it still is dog slow and a piece of junk. So it's like not really like, who cares? You know, the cheapest one versus that one is basically the same thing. So I saw it the other day and I actually was like, it looks good. I saw a picture of it and I was like, okay, I'm actually kind of flipped. I'm liking it. I did order one after listening to MKBHD's video. But yeah. And also, 3 years from now, $100 refundable deposit, whatever.
Right.
Like, yeah. You know, you're not really like missing out. And who knows what in 3 years, you know, you'll need or want. So, or maybe that'll be normal by then.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if other car companies start to kind of ape that design a little bit.
Yeah. Wouldn't be surprised
if I bet you somebody's going to.
Well, look at, again, how much Tesla pushed the industry into, you know, big, just a touch monitor that when it came out was absurd and like vilely hated. Like people were like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. It's just a giant tablet on the screen, you know, but and now everyone's doing that. Also, removing grills looked so weird when they first did it with like the S, X, and 3. And now that's slowly creeping into the rest of the design forms of everyone else. And it just looks normal now.
Well, if you look at the Ford Mach-E, I think that interior is incredible. And it's basically they just took what Tesla did and said, oh, well, let's just, you know, like add a couple more things that would that we think would be better. And that's so I thought they did a fantastic job. Mm-hmm. And yeah, of course, they would never have done that if Tesla didn't push that design first. The one thing about the screen to me that's interesting that I see a lot of other cars, Audis specifically, I see this a lot in. Or other Volkswagen, you know, designs is not only a screen, but the screen kind of sticking out. Because the Model 3, I remember when I first saw it, I thought, wow, that looks dumb. Like that thing's just mounted. It's like mounting a TV on the wall. Like this looks ridiculous. Obviously, when you drive in it, it's a different experience, and you don't really notice it. It seems fine. But from the outside, I remember when they first unveiled it, I was like, what is this? Mm-hmm. But now you start to see a lot of other cars doing that same thing, and it just kind of seems normal, you know?
Literally.
That was a thing that kept passing through my head that night. I was like, I don't know how to process this, but I remember feeling a little bit of this, not as much, because it's not as radical of a redesign. But I remember feeling a little bit about that, about the Model 3. And, of course, now I love it. So, I was trying to, like, just give myself time, and it has grown on me.
I really do wish they would have both in you know, Cybertruck still a ways down the road. But the Model Y is pretty close to being here, and I don't think that that's going to go through any major design changes between now and then. But I really would have loved if they had just put a little screen, something behind the steering wheel that gives you just some basic stuff. Mostly because, and you guys drive threes regularly, but when I do, I feel like the screen is small and cramped. And that's just my perspective coming from an X with a much, you know, larger center screen. But really, the screen would, I think, would be fine if you could just remove the stuff that's on the left third of it. Right, if you could remove the car and the autopilot and the speed and that stuff and just put like a very small screen right behind the steering wheel and put just that stuff and then open up that other third, I think the screen would be totally fine in terms, or at least, you know, in my perspective of it. But that was something I was hoping for on the Model Y. Obviously, I didn't get that. I really hope they do something like that with the Cybertruck, because even if they just did a heads-up display, you know, it's not expensive to add another little screen right there. And, you know, software and all that shouldn't be too complicated. Like, it should be fairly trivial. And I think it would add a lot to people accepting, being more accepting of it.
Yeah. And speaking of the Model Y, I can't help but think now how conservative that looks.
Yeah.
For being, you know, for coming out 2 years after the Model 3 and how they literally just copied a Model 3, which I think is a safe bet and a, probably for Tesla, a wise thing to do, just because they're always pushing the boundaries so much, and this was their one chance to be like, okay, hold on, let's pause for a second, do what we did. We've been saying this the whole time. It's like, let's just repeat the success of Model 3 and make it have more appeal, blah, blah, blah. Like, done. That's super. That's great. But now looking at like how it just looks so normal already, like a totally normal car.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
When they started, I guess one of the things that I always thought was great about the S and then later the 3 was that before that, all electric cars looked ridiculous. They were always these little dinky things, and they always had to put those like half things over the back wheel just to make mm-hmm. everybody look at it and be like, oh, that's a dinky little electric car. They were doing everything they could to make it not something people want to buy. And I was like really happy that Tesla came out with a car that just looks like a nice car.
Yeah.
You know, and I liked the normalcy of it. And I guess now we're kind of flipping back the other way a little bit with the Cybertruck.
So maybe not so extreme. Maybe not so extreme.
Yeah. What I do think is funny is how I look at the renderings, some of the guesses people had made before they released it, and now those look silly to me.
Yeah.
You know, I look at those, I'm like, yeah, like Tesla's going to do that.
Right. Yeah, you're right. Especially the ones that were basically like a Model 3 lifted up as a truck, you know, like those ones now look very like, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in addition to the looks, I think it's obviously important to look at the numbers and see whether or not this is a good value. And so I did that in a video, as you guys probably saw. But if you guys are unfamiliar, we can kind of run through these real quick. There were some people on the internet saying that the price, this wasn't a price competitive option, the Cybertruck. And those people would be wrong because it is when you look at price of something, the way you think of cars or the way you should think of cars is kind of more holistically, you know, what is the overall cost of owning the vehicle? And so Edmunds.com has been doing this for decades. I think other people do it too now. It's kind of became the standard, the true cost of ownership. And so I, you know, sat down, did the math on it, and it turns out that in California and in Texas, I used two different locations to try to balance it out. Because when you look at like national averages of things, it's kind of dumb because nobody really lives in a national average. People live in one place or the other. And because you're looking at gas costs and electricity costs, those vary greatly. So, you know, I put it together and it looks like the F-150 in California. Now I chose the F-150 that is recommended by Edmunds because I'm not an F-150 guy. I don't know what I'm talking about. I tried to just be as honest and pure and as true as possible and be even conservative and give the F-150 the best chance possible of winning this, you know, true cost of ownership comparison. And it failed miserably. And it, you know, is about $19,000 in California in terms of savings by owning a Cybertruck versus the F-150 Lariat edition. And in Texas, it's, you know, it's $18,800. So it's, you know, you're approaching $20,000 in savings just over 5 years, not including if you keep the thing for much longer, which, you know, people tend to do with trucks. And then, you know, in addition, because people were saying, well, what about the Chevy Silverado? It turns out that that also is it kind of doesn't fare that well against it, but it is much better. And so I did the same analysis and if you guys are watching, obviously you're seeing this, if you're listening, I have a spreadsheet here where I actually pulled all that together. And so it comes out to be around just under $7,000 in California across 5 years and just above $6,000 in Texas. Now, when I compared the Silverado versus the Cybertruck, I chose the two-wheel drive option, the work truck edition, which is the cheapest, lowest model they make. You know, they might even have like pump windows or something. You have to get out and, you know, kickstart it or something. It doesn't even start on its own. I don't know. It's the lowest, cheapest piece of junk that they make, and it's just not even a fair comparison. But I'm like, let's just be as biased towards the gas cars as much as we possibly can. The only thing I added was a six-seater, a crew cab versus a two-door, like two-seater or whatever, because that's like beyond like not a fair comparison, right?
Generous,
that'd be like a basic Honda Civic versus like a performance Model 3 or something. You'd be like, yeah, these aren't even quite the same thing. So even trying to bias myself as much as possible towards a Chevy Silverado, the Cybertruck is still a better deal. And yeah, not to mention all the other stuff you get, autopilot, you know, the locking bed, built-in air compressor, like all the like probably dozens, if not hundreds of features that you get from a dual motor Cybertruck compared to the piece of junk, cheapest Silverado you can possibly buy. So I did that because there's people giving me crap about the Ford F-150 I chose, and still it comes out to be a better deal. Not as much of a compelling deal, but still pretty good.
Yeah, and you don't even factor in things like a bed liner.
Uh-huh.
Or is it a liner? Whatever the cover that covers up the bed. Anyway, you don't factor in that. You don't factor in the air compressor thing, all these things that you just get with the Cybertruck that you don't get with the others. You'd have to pay extra for that.
I had two questions about your methodology, though.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're showing that the Cybertruck could cost under 50 grand, right?
Yeah, 53,000 total here.
Well, then 46,610 in Texas, right?
Yep.
But did you you didn't do the dual motor.
I did.
Right?
I did.
How, doesn't that start at 50?
Great question, Tim. Thank you for asking. So the way that you come up with a true cost of ownership is you don't look, the original purchase price does play a factor, but really the biggest chunk, if you look at the categories of things that we consider in a true cost of ownership, is depreciation. So when you buy it, yes, this one is $49,900, but then when you sell it, you get some of that money back. So the true cost of ownership is the delta between those two. So it's how much money you basically lost from buying it and then reselling it. Now, if you sold it for $0, then yeah, that would be, you know, the full amount.
Even greater.
But it doesn't. And so to come up with this depreciation number, what I did is I took the same percentage depreciation drop that the Ford F-150 had.
Right. Yep.
And I used a more expensive F-150 because what I wanted to do was a real-world comparison. So when I found this model that I was comparing, instead of just saying, here's what the internet on Ford.com says it should cost, I went and said, find inventory in San Diego, where I live, and guess what? It was a lot more expensive. So what that means then is that these depreciation percentages are actually even more inflated than they should be, because these depreciation figures were based on a different lower MSRP. So anyways, so what I did was I took the depreciation percentage, again, biasing even harder towards Ford winning this, and then applied that to the purchase price of the Cybertruck. So that's how across 5 years your total cost of ownership, you know, doesn't come out to be the full price of the car.
Two more questions.
Yes.
Still. I know this. You got the true cost of ownership directly from Edmunds, who quotes like $5,000 or $1,000 a year, I think, on maintenance.
For which one?
For any of the gas vehicles, really. It's something pretty absurd.
$5,700 across 5 years for the Ford.
That I have a hard time imagining.
And then,
because, you know, it's a new car under warranty. All fluids, you know, say you top off fluids, every fluid in the vehicle once a year, you're at like $100.
So there's
maybe $200 for like a bunch of oil changes and stuff.
Well, there's service and then there's repairs. So, right. So warranty stuff is covered, and you can see that on the Edmunds numbers, they have zeros for the first 2 years. But things like brake pads or oil changes typically are not covered unless you buy a service contract, which they'll, like, you know, they kind of package it up as like, yeah, we'll just add $11 to your monthly payment. In the end, you're saving like 5% or something on that. But it's not it's not free. It never is. You know, you guys have bought cars at car dealerships, right? The worst part is always when you go into the finance guy's office and he adds on all this other junk that you don't actually need but convinces you you do. So, but again,
because you're already spending 20 grand and they're like, well, come on, what about paint protection? What about underbody paint protection? What about the mud flap paint protection?
Yeah, right. Exactly. So, but okay, again, yeah, like I didn't come up with these numbers, right? And Edmunds is the one that's been doing it literally for decades. So this is where, now I think they actually pulled these figures from real world survey data. Like they get real data to put these numbers in there. I don't believe that they just make it up either. But they do list the repairs as $0 for the first 2 years. And then some other cars you'll see, it'll be $0 for the first three. Like I think BMW also has that, and Mercedes. So, you know, those kind of things. Yep.
And the last thing I wanted to mention, I saw Doug DeMiro's, one of his videos about, I think it was Doug DeMiro, his second video, I think, about Cybertruck, where he's sitting there kind of explaining that, you know, he was criticizing people for saying, how can you know the options of Cybertruck and say that an F-150 is going to have, you're going to need this package to kind of match its options? And I'm sitting there going like, dude, you could load up an F-150 and there's probably not going to be a single option that has that the Cybertruck doesn't have. And I guarantee it's still going to be missing a bunch of options.
Well, it depends on...
like, can the F-150 drive itself? Can the F-150 have a... does it have an air compressor? Does it have a 110 and 220 outlet? Does it have underbed storage? Does it have lockable storage on the wings? Does it have a frunk? Like, all these other things. Everything else is just a normal, like, power windows, heated seats.
Yeah.
Cruise control, radio. Like, that's stuff that's just going to be in every car these days.
Yeah, yeah, I saw that too. I'm not sure what he was referring to with that. I think he was trying to make the argument that even the prices, when it says $49,900, that we don't know what the final price is going to be, and that's not going to be the right price. But you know, and I saw a lot of comments on my video about that. I think people were having a flashback to the Model 3, where we didn't really know pricing until much, much later. Mm-hmm. If you remember, they unveiled it. And they mm-hmm. didn't give you a price. They said as low as $35,000. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that wasn't until years later. That's much different than I can go to a website and put a deposit on a specific option right now that lists a price. Mm-hmm. That is far different than $1,000 for who knows what it'll be when the Model 3 comes out. So the I think people were having kind of, you know, transposing what happened with the Model 3 pricing and features and stuff to this one. And that doesn't appear to be the same case. Right. You are in really, one of the things I kind of want to do just a quick little rant video about this. So one thing that Doug harped on a lot was towing capacity, and he's right that, the model I chose, the Ford Lariat, I think the lowest end one even tows 13,200 pounds, which is tremendous. That's a great deal. And if you go up to the Ford, the heavy duty ones, like the 250 or 350, there are some that tow up to like 30,000 pounds. I mean, Tim, how much, maybe I'm way off, but how much does a Falcon 9 weigh?
Empty about 20 tons, which 20 metric tons, so about 40,000 ish.
Pounds, right?
Pounds.
So
yeah,
okay, so that Ford F-350, I mean, it can't do it, but it's getting close to being able to tow a Falcon mm-hmm. 9, right? So yeah, those things are now the deal is, though, in this is where I probably want to do a video on this. There was a survey done by, I don't have it in front of me, but you can go look at this. There's a company that's been doing this for forever, and they do this new vehicle owner survey, and they look at people that buy trucks, and it's like 250,000 people a year are surveyed by this. So it's a massive amount of people. Something like 90% of them haven't towed anything in the last 5 years of owning a truck. And something like 80% of them don't even use the bed for anything other than, like, you know, a gym bag or basic stuff you would just throw in your trunk anyways. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. so like, when Doug was doing that whole thing about, oh, well, look, the towing capacity is the main thing people buy trucks for, that doesn't actually appear to be true from the data perspective. It may be a great marketing tool. It may be a great thing that's like, we can tow, you know, your house, your tiny house. You know, you Californians and hippies love tiny houses. Throw that in the back. Let's go. But the truth is that the vast, vast majority of people do not tow things ever. But I agree, though, that if towing is a major part of why you're buying a truck, then the Cybertruck is not a great choice. And it doesn't have anything to do with its capability in terms of actually being able to tow. It has to do with charging. If you're towing something across town, 5, 10 miles, 50 miles, fine. It'll be totally fine. It'll work. Again, probably that's even of people that tow stuff. That's probably a big percentage of people is just towing stuff, you know, short distances. If you're towing stuff out to a construction site 150 miles away and then trying to tow it back, you're going to really have a bad experience when you have to go drop off and unhook and then go charge for an hour and then come back and hook up and then drive home. It's just mm-hmm. not going to be a great choice. So I agree that, like, towing long distances with a Cybertruck is not going to be a good experience yet. And you probably shouldn't buy one for that reason. Thankfully, you know, 90% of truck owners don't fall into that category of people. So I don't think it'll make a difference in terms of why people would or wouldn't buy it.
Yeah. I think most pickup truck owners here in Texas basically just haul their briefcases to their office jobs. Like that's basically all they ever carry in it. But if you ask them, they say, but I have it if I need it.
Yeah.
You know, someday if I need it, I'll be able to throw something in the back. And so
yes.
Does the Cybertruck hit that need?
Well,
I mean, I think so.
Yeah. On the random occurrences. Yeah. But imagine like you want to take a boat out to the lake, you know, kind of maybe a more recreational fun kind of common use case versus like hauling, you know, a bulldozer to a construction site. That's a different animal, right? Exclude those from towing
things. A giant
things.
Wind turbine blade.
Right. Yeah, like, forget it. Yeah. Gas cars, you still got that one, you know, for that 1% right. of use cases. Yeah, towing a boat to the lake. You don't need 13,000 pounds for that unless you have, like, a massive yacht you're towing. Mm. Like the 10,000-pound or even 7,500-pound on the single motor, totally capable, totally fine. So that's where the whole towing argument is just kind of dumb. It just doesn't make any sense at all to think, oh, I'm not going to buy that because it can't tow, you know, the five, you know, monster things that I tow every day. Yeah, nobody does that anyway. So it's kind of a dumb argument. So, yeah.
Well, you're exactly right. So I kind of wanted to get into on the same topic still, kind of getting reactions from friends. And, of course, I've got some friends that are, you know, that work in construction that, you know, work, you know, maintenance and crews and all, you know, that have driven trucks their entire lives. And I was asking them, you know, their thoughts. And of course, like they all will find these edge cases right away where like, I can't have it. You know, one time in 2004, I had to drive to St. Louis pulling a trailer. So I can't get a Cybertruck. And you're like, okay. You know, and I was like, well, hold on. And they're like, but then there's crews that do that all the time. And I'm like, okay. So for the crews that do that all the time, that are literally like, traveling on the interstates, pulling their whole work, you know, going site to site or across the country. Yep, Cybertruck's probably not your best choice.
Yep.
But like for that, the one time in 2004 that you couldn't have done that trip very easily, maybe you borrow another truck or whatever. You know, like let's look at how often you use the truck for what and then determine if that's going to be a better option for you or a worse option. But of course it's so polarizing anyway because of the way it looks that most people just write it off as it's dumb.
That's like carrying crutches around with you all the time because you sprained your ankle 4 years ago.
Nice. Yes. Or put it or keep them in the trunk of your car or something. Yeah, like what if.
So just to
exactly right
fact check and correct myself about what I said earlier, because I had the notes for this already. It's an automotive research firm called Strategic Vision. And their study is each year with 250,000 people, very in-depth. 75% of truck owners use their truck for towing one time a year or less, meaning never, because it's a survey and it's not, you know, empirical data. Nearly 70% of truck owners go off-road one time a year or less, which the Cybertruck could actually be probably incredible for that. And a full 35% of truck owners use their truck for hauling, putting something in the bed once a year or less. So meaning they don't even put anything in the back at all.
That was kind of my point earlier. Like most people who drive trucks just have them just in case someday.
Yep.
You know?
Now
that,
and they're going to get 10 miles a gallon the rest of the year. Right. You know, nothing about it makes sense to me. It never has.
To wrap that up, Jenny's my wife Jenny, her dad, her father was here for Thanksgiving, and he actually is in construction. He's a concrete inspector, so he goes out to where they're building like freeways and, you know, bridges and things, and he's out there. He drives a truck. I think it's a F-150 or Ram 1500, whatever. Yeah, he has like some tools he uses for the concrete inspection job that he does, where he has to like have buckets and whatever to do stuff. And he throws it in the back of the truck, and it's nice. But when I asked him, or when he was asked, kind of like just peppering me with questions about the Cybertruck, not once did he ever mention towing anything. And so I asked him, I said, well, do you ever tow anything? He's like, oh, no, never. You know, and I'm like, well, what if you need something? He's like, well, if we need something on a job site, like a backhoe or a bulldozer or something massive, we have like heavy duty equipment people that do that. That's not even so. Even 90% of the people on the job site don't tow things there,
right?
But they do use the bed of their truck pretty regularly. So you know, it's just a dumb argument. It just doesn't hold water in terms of you know, why someone would or wouldn't buy a truck. More likely people are going to buy or not buy because of my dad's a Ford guy, I'm a Ford guy, I live in Texas, I'm buying a truck. Yeah, it's just like heritage at this point.
Yeah. I don't know why we didn't say this right off the bat, but my friends were like, but you know what it should be is the police car.
Yeah.
Didn't
Dubai buy, order some?
I think Dubai did, or is planning, like, duh. Like,
yeah,
that is the ultimate. I mean, even at the price, even the basic model is the ultimate police vehicle already. It's armored. Even if it's not quite bulletproof glass or two kilo, that's still more bulletproof than a normal window. And obviously the doors, plus like just everything about it makes it the ultimate police vehicle. I mean, it should be required by law that police stop buying like Ford Explorers that just sit there idling literally all day.
Well, so that is becoming more of a thing. So in San Diego, we're doing a lot of this, where basically all the county vehicles are electric. So they're kind of like putting in a new thing that, well, they don't actually care who makes it, but they have to be electric. And then the state of California, because I think GM and Toyota sided with the Trump administration on the EPA emissions standards rollback that Trump wants to push, even though none of the major automakers except those two are pushing it. They are no longer going to be buying any vehicles from those companies because of that. So I think that you're seeing, I mean, you know, this is like an edge case of that with the Cybertruck being bulletproof and stuff. But I think you will likely see those kind of things happening where it just makes financial sense and it's better for the environment and the lower maintenance, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, the Cybertruck for these kind of applications, I think, will be a hit for sure.
Well, and just imagine seeing the police pull up in that. Now that, like, that is the kind of because it already looks like a military.
It's a SWAT
and, like,
vehicle, yeah.
SWAT, it looks like, if you want to make it authoritative, not authoritarian, but like, well, sure, that too. I don't know. If you want to make it like have just authority on the road, like give it to the police department. And
so it's the mayor of Mexico City bought a bunch, and Dubai, so far.
Wow,
yeah, I heard about Dubai. So I'll be the peacenik, blue green person, whatever. But like, I would argue there's a case to make for the police forces are already getting a little bit too militarized.
Right.
Oh, right.
And I'm not sure that's the best direction to go. But that's a whole other.
Isn't a lot of that coming from leftover military equipment was being donated to police?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In like.
No, I've read some stuff about, not to go down this rabbit hole too much, but I've read some stuff about how the more militarized police forces become in urban areas, the worse things get, because people don't like, there's not a friendly neighborhood police guy that people can turn to and they feel like they trust. Instead, it's like an occupying force, you know.
We need to put them in Priuses.
Well, I think some have done that.
There are public safety officers that are that. Before we wrap up Cybertruck, can I show you guys a tweet that I saw that I really, this is pretty interesting, and I just want to get your guys' thoughts on this.
I like tweets.
For those of you listening, I pulled up a tweet from a Twitter user, Tax, and that's T4KZ1. And they have four different renders here that people have done to kind of change up the way Cybertruck looks. And really, they didn't touch. Two of them cut off the bed a little bit, but number two still keeps even that what seems like a controversial trunk line thing, or the bed line.
The sail pillars.
All they did is they kind of changed up the fenders and the body panels, and holy, like the lower half of the body panels, that changes everything. I personally love number two. Number two looks insane. But it looks like they also increased the
wheels. Can you do that
with
the stainless steel? Isn't that kind of the whole thing? Like, you have to have the flat panels because it can't be stamped?
Yeah, that's true. But,
well, so you could still have those lines. They just wouldn't be curved like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, even if they're just totally jutted, straight, jarring curves, it'd be kind of cool.
Now, do we know... Okay, so stainless... People say stainless steel, but it's the same steel that Starship is made of, right? Which is the 301 or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's their own kind of alloy, but it's, I think, based on 301.
And is that stainless, technically? Mm-hmm. Or are we just saying that because it's silver and it's
steel?
No,
it's still stainless steel.
It is?
Yeah.
Okay, so you need WD-40 to clean it. That's right.
to keep it from pitting, because
actually I think it's Scotch Brite's pads, right? I didn't listen to it yet, but Ryan McCaffrey, who Ride the Lightning podcast, tweeted at me about that because he's a former DeLorean owner. And so he went, apparently I haven't listened to it yet, but maybe people have, but apparently he went deep into like maintenance and care of a stainless steel vehicle like that.
That's awesome.
One little thing that I wanted to point out, because I was thinking about it before it flies out of my brain and we move on, but there's a YouTuber, he's got a pretty small channel, but I think he does some really good work. His name's Emmett Short, but he was talking about one of the things that probably will be really popular with the Cybertruck is for either contractors or small businesses that can put their logos on the side of it, because he was basically making the point like, you want your logo to be seen, put it on a Cybertruck. Like, that's going to get everybody's attention.
Yeah,
that's
true.
I mean, that's pretty basic marketing, but that makes sense.
In that vein, I feel like the Cybertruck is the Hummer of the EV world, where at first you're like, that's a military vehicle. That thing's hideous. No one's going to want that. And then every person that wants to be obnoxious and drive this monster thing is like, oh, yeah, that's it, man. I'm going to drive this. The girls are going to like it. Like, it was a whole thing, you know?
That's definitely what I like least about it, is that over-the-topness.
But I think you know, there's so many parallels with that vehicle. So
I guess before we wrap Cybertruck, I did want to get your guys' opinions on one more thing too. A lot of people brought up the idea that, like, is there a crumple zone?
Oh, right.
Because that's obviously a huge concern when you have 3 millimeter thick stainless steel. Is that still an option? Like, what do you guys think? I mean, my thoughts is obviously Tesla, like, has thought of that. You can't really sell a vehicle that's totally a rigid body. I would guess there's just a crumple zone still. I don't know.
On the front, maybe?
I just don't know, honestly.
I think the crumple zone is the other car.
Well, it's for pedestrians,
the entire other car.
Like, well, it'll just never hit a person because it's, you know, autonomous.
Yeah. I don't think the transportation, the NTHSA or whatever it's called or whatever.
NHTSA.
I don't think they're going to love
that. They call it NHTSA, and I absolutely hate it. So I just say NHTSA.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am curious. I mean, I will go to that, like, I'm sure the engineers, someone at Tesla at some point was like, oh, wait, I'm in charge of crumple zones. Like, it has to have a crumple. I'm sure it's been brought up, but I love that everyone's like, it'll never be like that because it can't have a crumple zone. Like,
and then Elon's in the room like, who let Milton back in here? Go back to the basement. I am making a Mars rover. There are no people on Mars. We don't need crumple zones.
See? This is why we can't have nice things.
What about the light bar? Isn't that not road legal? I thought I heard that somewhere.
The top or the bottom one?
Well, both, I guess.
I don't know. I know there's a law about how far apart the lights need to be to mark at least, you know, an approximation of its width. It has to be like, I'm making up a number, but something like 90% of the width of the car has to be, you know, the beams, the headlights have to be within that perimeter or something, so that you don't just have one thing and then you still have, like, you know, a meter on each side of the, you know, headlight or something.
I wouldn't be surprised if the bar, because there are definitely two spots that are far brighter on that bar. I wouldn't be surprised if the bar can be adjusted, because like Rivian, for example, has that same thing where it has that light bar across the front. But I don't know. Yeah. I mean, these are all things that we just assume they've either figured out or have 3 years to figure out. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I still am a little bit in camp. I think we'll see some tweaks.
Yeah.
And I think it'll be close, because I think Elon really wants to have what really looks like, you know, a concept car on the road. I know he wants that. But I'm still thinking there's going to be some, I don't know, a certain percentage of tweaks since then or until then.
100%. 100%. And it needs to be, so.
Tense. Yeah. So, speaking of years, crumple zones crashing.
It's been a year since we've had another famous crash.
Yeah.
Speaking it was just kind of dragons.
Fun. Yeah. There we go. So to be honest, like, we actually didn't have a ton of news, so I guess we're just going to talk about a normal, boring launch, I guess, today. Quote-unquote boring. I mean, 3 years ago, this had been us screaming at the TV.
Right.
Or whatever it's called. What's a TV? Internet screen? I don't know.
What is a TV?
Actually, yeah, almost exactly 4 years ago, we would have been screaming for real when they really did land their first booster. That's December 21st. I should throw a little party. That'd be a fun idea. Anyway, so today, I actually just live streamed before we recorded this. SpaceX did launch CRS-19. Let me pull a clip up here while I talk about it, because it's, it was a beautiful mission. But the fun thing about this mission is it came exactly to the day on the one-year anniversary of CRS-16. And I don't know if you guys remember CRS-16. It was a brand new Block 5 booster, just like this, going to the International Space Station, just like this. And on reentry, this is the one that had that problem where the grid fin got stuck and it lost control on reentry and descent and ended up landing, softly kind of landing, pirouetting into the ocean as opposed to landing on land about a kilometer or two off the coast of Florida. So today they made up for it. Today, I mean, they've already made up for it. They've already...
like, they haven't launched since then.
Right. They've launched, I think, a dozen times.
What do you think this is? ULA? Come on.
Hey. So I think they've launched about a dozen times since then and had great success with their landings, except for the Falcon Heavy Center Core this year, which was the only landing to not make it this year.
You mean make it back to port? It did land.
Well, landing. Because the second Falcon Heavy landed, the center core did, but it didn't make it back to port. But as far as what landed, all the landings since then have been successful, except for the third Falcon Heavy center core, the STP-2. They had a great year of really, nailing down everything. They're just making those landings look totally normal these days, though. Mm. And just as a reminder, last year, everyone was concerned that, oh, great, they're going to have to make major changes now so the grid fins don't seize up again. That was obviously a huge flaw. Are they going to have to add a second pump? We had all these speculations of how are they going to make it safe? Well, it's remember, the grid fins and the landing portion of the booster have nothing to do with human safety and human certification. It's purely for SpaceX to reuse the boosters. So it doesn't need to be certified. So it's not like people are like, oh, it's never going to be safe. It's more just like SpaceX will want to figure that out so they save $20-30 million or whatever it is, mm-hmm. But the point being, the fix for that was a bleed valve.
That's it.
That's all they needed to do. They added a bleed valve. There's apparently this like very small stall zone where the hydraulic pump could stall under very particular conditions. They found those very particular conditions a year ago today, and since then they added a bleed valve, and now everything's fine. Ta-da!
Yay!
Space flight.
Let's see it land. Right. Come on.
Okay, I'll get to the landing.
So fast forward to the cool stuff.
Get to the part that we care
fast
about.
Fast forward to where the camera cut out again.
Yeah. All right, here you go.
There it is.
Cut out. Now, the last Falcon Heavy, we got it, didn't we? It didn't cut out?
Last Falcon Heavy, we had a really good stream because the booster wasn't landing, because it ended up not landing on the drone ship.
Oh.
It helped not shake the satellite. But other more recent, this is actually my internet hanging up now. That's funny, I think. Well, that's funny. Anyway, more recent Falcon 9 landings, we actually had a really clear one, I think, the last Starlink mission.
Starlink. That's what I'm thinking.
Probably the best footage of landing we've ever had, as far as not losing the stream.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's just always variables, they're working on it. They're making improvements, but at the end of the day, you're still having a satellite uplink. And at the end, and the other end of the day is like, don't spend millions of dollars trying to make a fancy like drone relay videography with a 3000 millimeter lens system that costs you $5 million for 5 seconds of video. That is only to please the internet. Like, that does not help their business case at all. That's
you're like,
that.
But it helps
little line item on the invoice to the customer and filming costs.
we provided you those 5 extra seconds of live stream. That's going to cost you $5 million.
But that one from a year ago, that was pretty dramatic, though.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember that because... the shot
it started
from
spinning,
the,
right?
The thing, yeah, like the world starts just rotating.
Yeah.
Like, whoa, what's happening? And then,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it looked really violent, too. I mean, it got whipped around pretty hard. I was actually really impressed that the booster stayed together. Mm. I mean, it was jarring. And as it got more and more, you know, those grid fins being stuck in that cantered position, as it got deeper into the atmosphere, those had more and more bite and really just started whipping that thing around. And, you know, the RCS thrusters were trying to counter all of those actions, but they're not strong enough. And then when the Merlin engine fired, it started to kind of even out a little bit. And but it went under some pretty extreme forces and held together really well. So it is pretty cool to see that, you know, that's a good thing going forward, as, you know, as I guess as rockets need to be durable enough to have humans landing on them, yeah, and things like that too, you know, in them while they land. That's pretty cool.
I'd be nuts. I can't even imagine.
Well, and I still think about the way they want to land the Starship with that flip-flop maneuver right at the last second, and I'm just like, oh.
Yeah.
Can you imagine being on it,
being
looking
on
out the
it,
window,
yeah,
and just being like, oh, God, oh, God, oh, my God, no, 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 no. Just like, it'd be like with a race car driver with a parallel parking spot, like, at the opposite end of the parking lot, and they're going at it, you know, 150 kilometers an hour, handbrake turn, sliding perfectly in, and just being like, I'm alive. I'm alive. Like, that's what this is going to be like. Yeah, exactly. That's what this is going to be like.
Flight attendants prepare for landing.
Yeah, seriously. Everyone hold on to your barf bags. This is our belly flop maneuver.
And those aisle carts go flying across the wing.
I forgot to mention, speaking of Starship and Cybertruck, we didn't even mention this, that Elon did confirm that we can order a very special edition that has stainless steel from Mark One. I want my... That will have me... I will definitely actually buy a Cybertruck if I can have Mark One stainless steel, and I will never touch it, and I'll put it on display so everyone can come up and see
touch
it,
it.
And they can touch it. Yeah. I won't
I
drive
love
it.
I his response, though, that was just kind of like, really?
Really?
Okay.
Like, dude, what do you mean, really? Mean, like, okay. Of course I'm being serious. Are you kidding me? I would pay a lot of money for that just because that's so freaking cool. But
I mean, I'll pay a lot less money for one made of the same material, but that didn't, you know, blow its lid, and
right.
And I'll just tell people it is, and then, you know,
not as fun, mm-hmm. not as
like,
fun.
This
Why
is
don't
made
they
from
just make
Starship? Did it go to space? I mean, no.
It could
what
have.
What mission did it do?
Something went up though.
It left the ground.
Yeah. What was its mission? It stood pretty in the background of the presentation once, and then got really cold for a bit and fell apart.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I guess today's going to be a little bit shorter show because we're gonna do this already. Why don't
okay.
they just with no segue?
We have two more stories to cover, but sure, we can do it.
Oh, we do.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because I had to pee really bad.
Speaking of cars made of metal.
Is that my segue or Ben's?
Or do we want to go ahead and do the Why Don't They
Let's
Just?
Let's do the Why Don't They Just.
Okay.
Where's our music?
Oh, crap. Oh, God. Hey, hang on. Okay, today's Why Don't They Just comes from Mark Gallion at MGALYAN on Twitter. Why don't they just make trailers for electric vehicles with embedded battery packs so that they can attach to the vehicle to make up for the lost range while towing?
Yeah.
What do you guys
I mean, like it, Mark. Do it.
Yes.
Why don't you?
Yeah.
Now, did he say can make up for the lost range while towing? Yeah. Okay. So Rich did this. Rich Benoit.
Mm-hmm.
Rich Rebuilds on YouTube. He took an old Model S battery pack, I would imagine, and put some wheels on it. I don't think the car is capable of being plugged in while driving.
That's right.
So that would be a change that they would have to make, or you know, you could figure out a way to hack. That's kind of getting pretty hardcore in terms of the hacking, though. But I'm in on this. In fact, I did the math on it once. If we could have a Tesla Semi and make a 53-foot trailer out of Model 3 battery pack modules entirely, and you could, I mean, in theory, it would cost like something like $3 million. But hey, you know, got that big YouTube money coming in. And you'd think that would be insanely heavy, and you'd be right. However, it would be like 20,000 pounds, which is not a whole lot for the Tesla Semi to pull. You know, nor, well, I guess the Cybertruck might struggle with it. But point being, you could do it for sure, and it would give you something like 10,000 miles of range, which is absolutely nuts.
You mean batteries? Like, it wouldn't even have storage room? It's just batteries?
Yeah, and well, no. Imagine just the trailer bed of a 53-foot, like, full-size container that you would buy. I guess they're, like, 40 feet. But anyways, if you literally just took apart Model 3s and just laid the battery, not the full-size battery pack, but the battery modules that are inside of them without all the extra stuff, you could fit enough to give you like something like 10,000 miles of range, you know, give or take 1,000 or two. But then, of course, if you want to charge it, it's going to take like 4 months. So,
yeah. Don't forget that roads have limits on how heavy gross vehicle weight can be.
It wouldn't be that heavy, though. That's my point. Because the truck fully loaded.
Take away from your payload capacity, though. Like,
no,
trucks need...
It wouldn't.
Yes, it would. If you're already limited and you're like, I can't even add any more of these whatever because I'm over the road limit, now 20,000 pounds is cut up in extra batteries.
Oh.
You just decreased your...
You're saying if you had a fully loaded trailer already.
If you're using it like a semi, yeah.
Oh. No, I'm saying forget that. I just want the battery pack and then put my tiny house on it, which won't weigh nearly like a fully loaded container. Yeah.
You just want to be able to drive 10,000 miles.
Why not? Yeah, let's roll.
And you stop at a supercharger and it takes like 3 days.
It would take like a month probably.
And you have to take all of the spots and everyone hates you.
Yeah. Yes. That's actually the big problem.
Yeah.
That's actually the big problem one of the big problems with towing in the Cybertruck is that you'd have to unhook your trailer to go charge. And that kind of kills it for a lot of people. Or you could just have your trailer just out in the middle of the parking lot. And, block everybody. But, hey, you're in a Cybertruck already. Whatever. You're already pushing that, you know, aggression. So,
I wouldn't be surprised if by then some of the supercharging stations actually have, like, vehicles in tow charging that are, like, more along the perimeter of parking lots.
There are some already.
Towing only. Yeah, there are a few. But if they made that more of a standard thing.
Yeah, like the one in Baker, which is between L.A. and Vegas, that I stopped out on that road trip I did had room for that for sure. You would be taking up 3 supercharging spots, but they were basically like in a row that you could park in. So
even though, you know how sometimes when you pull into a supercharging spot and they're all along the back, but there's one on the side.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you, and normally it's like, you know, there might be a turn. You could pinch your trailer really tight, turn in there, and at least not take up.
Yeah.
More than a stall and maybe be taking up a little bit of the actual parking lot, but
yeah,
I bet you could probably do that.
They need to make something. If they want people to be towing things and supercharging, they need to make it. I mean, for the mega charger, if you guys remember when that got announced with the semi, they're going to have to do something. Yeah. That would actually be an insane killer feature if the Cybertruck got this mega charger thing, ability. Imagine if you could... Because it's compatible with the Tesla Semi stuff, that it legit could charge like twice as fast as any other Tesla out there, even the V3 charging. But everybody would be buying that thing. They'd be like, oh, hell yeah. You know, road trips, big, beautiful, comfy cabin, autopilot, vaulted, locking copious amounts of storage, and it charges double than everyone else. Game over. Like,
you can hop in your... electric ATV and
yeah, that's
ride
right.
It around the parking lot,
just doing wheelies past everyone.
Yeah.
Wee, wee.
But there's a Carl's Jr. down the road. Hop on.
They're at Carl's Jr.'s. That's where they all are.
Yeah, actually, there's one in.
And that is
it. Well, it's Italy. It's spelled Italy, but it's
Italy.
Pronounced Italy. Yep. Yeah, Texas. I stopped there on the way back from Austin, actually, and there was.
And
Carl's Jr.
actually, like, I never thought about that, but there's so many times where you're supercharging, you do want to go somewhere like. Just far enough away, it doesn't really make sense to walk there and get there and back and stuff. Imagine if you could just get on the cyber quad and just be like,
what you need is like the hoverboards or something, like Tesla hoverboard, and you just like, you know, they just pop out of the side and you just pick it up and go. So it's smaller and easier even.
That'll be the next Back to the Future reference that they'll make in their car.
Yeah. But, Mark, to answer your question, yeah, I think that's absolutely a thing. We might have to ping Elon on Twitter and tell him that's an option we want for Cybertruck is to have a charging cable, you know, on the route of, like, where you're towing, you know, the big pin thing. and make it so you can charge as you tow or extend your range.
In some of the renders, in some of Tesla's renders, they have it pulling a very Cybertruck-looking
trailer.
I
don't think they had a cable.
To say that they might not, you know.
I'll ask him about it. We'll see if we can get an answer.
There you go. Direct line to Elon Musk himself. Now, some, you know, other Tesla owners are actually getting some hookup on some different things like this. So just a quick shout out on the Tesla Roadster owners. The original Roadster owners just got an email from Tesla saying that they're going to get better service, technicians, repair, and possibly some kind of big upgrades. So I thought this was pretty cool. As you know, it's funny, these are kind of coming back. I think a few YouTubers out there bought the original Roadster and made a ton of videos with them, and so like people are into them again. Mm-hmm. But one of the biggest challenges, I mean, service already is a challenge, but with the original Roadster, it's even worse. And there's all these things about like the batteries really kind of, I mean, they're just not the same level of tech as the newer Teslas, obviously. And so apparently they got an email from Jerome, the president of automotive at Tesla, saying that they're going to get their own dedicated service advisors, technicians, and repair centers. They need to improve service, obviously. And, you know, maybe with that, they'll start doing other things. They'll start maybe offering battery pack upgrades or something like that. Maybe you can swap out what's in there with a battery pack that would give you longer range and support supercharging, which, if you didn't know, original Roadsters are not able to supercharge. So, you know, there you go. They also can't run out. If you drive it to zero and kill it, that's it. Battery's done. Got to replace it. Mm-hmm. So, Whoa. Yeah.
Well, how many are actually out there? There's not that many, right?
I believe there were 2,480 made.
Yeah,
not to be specific, but
or Atlantic.
Oh, specific. Sorry.
Well, I mean that's a good thing to do, and I don't think it would take too much out of their resources to service that small number of cars. You know,
right?
But I mean, that's really cool to have. You know, the founder edition is basically the reason the company is around, making sure that those cars are still ticking and it's still improving, even, which is like nothing else ever.
Dude, it's pretty cool. Like, have you guys ever ridden in one?
Mm-mm. I don't think I've ever seen one in person.
Oh, really? Yeah, it's a pretty wild experience because the battery pack is not below you, so your butt is on the ground. Like, you are sitting on the pavement practically. Like, you can easily open the door and touch the ground.
Yeah.
And everything is behind you. So it's just a totally different feeling of a car. You know, there's all kinds of buttons and levers. There's an emergency brake. There's all these kind of things.
No screens.
There is a screen.
A little.
And it's like postage size. It's tiny. Yeah. Yeah.
My dad would call that a Mickey Mouse screen.
Right.
My sister and her husband, they have a Toyota Sienna. It has a backup camera, and the monitor is literally like the size of I don't even know, like a, you know, CF card or something. It's just tiny. And when my dad first saw it, he goes, "What is this Mickey Mouse screen?" And that's always stuck around. So that's basically what the Roadster has. It's just a tiny little Mickey Mouse screen.
Yeah.
But for reference, I have driven one of the a Lotus Elise, which is what the original Roadster is based on, although it basically was entirely like re-engineered and ended up being a horrible thing to base a car on.
Yeah.
But yeah, you like climb down into that and you do feel like you are wiping your butt on the highway.
Yeah.
Like, it just feels like you are going to scratch your entire, it's insane. It's crazy.
That's how a lot of those cars are, you know, like even like a McLaren 720 or those kind of things are like, you're sitting super, super low.
Mm-hmm. Nuts. It's nutty.
No,
yeah,
bumps.
Well, earlier you were talking about landing something, and I thought, you know, Ohio just landed a pretty big deal as well.
Nice.
With a new battery factory for electric vehicles from our good old friends at General Motors. So Joe, you want to tell us about what's happening over in good old Ohio with General Motors?
Well, I haven't really looked into it too much. I'm just kind of the one that recommended the story, but yeah, I mean, $2.3 billion is what they're investing into this thing. They're supposed to bring in 1,100 new jobs. I don't know. To me, for some reason, that feels significant and important that they're bringing jobs in on the backs of electric battery production and EV production. You know, it's to be able to see the EV movement creating jobs and kind of becoming a thing that people are like shepherding in and saying, let's bring more of this in here because it's going to create more jobs. I think that's important that, you know, the economy does matter. You know, those mm-hmm. factors matter in these things. But yeah, it's supposed to begin in mid 2020. Does it say where exactly?
Yeah, I was wondering that.
Ohio.
Well, and while you talk about that, I think it's like you said, it's really cool that that they're actually building in Ohio, which is already such a, you know, industry driven state that has seen really, really severe job loss, as you know, the mm-hmm. autos industry, a lot of plants have closed, steel, aluminum, you know, all these plants are and not doing very well. And that's a big scare to see something, a new technology that a lot of people, I think, fear being put right back into these communities, right back into a state where probably some of that fear is almost the highest, I think can have a huge impact, like you were saying, Joe. So that's...
Well, yeah, yeah. And also, this all goes to drive down the cost of lithium-ion batteries, not just for EVs, but for energy storage solutions. Mm-hmm. It's super important. So actually, I found a part right here. It says, the plant's annual capacity is expected to be more than 30 gigawatt hours.
Good.
For example, for comparison, Gigafactory 1 produces 20 gigawatt hours a year. So
is that so currently that's what it produces?
Well, this is according to CNBC, so yeah. Take that with a
I think it's
salt. But
if I remember the presentation, I think it was around 500 gigawatt hours is what they were targeting, but maybe I'm off.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, don't forget it's not, and it's in its like basic form still.
That,
really.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's yeah. It's very early days.
It hasn't reached its final form.
This isn't even the final me.
Yeah.
No, that's,
but that always gets me excited. Cool. And I was making the argument a while back about how like something like 15 or 20 gigafactory size battery production facilities are going up around the world in the next 3 years or so. I mean,
mm-hmm.
that's going to make such a huge difference. And yeah. I think we don't even know how much that of a difference that's going to make until, you know, it all comes online. We're going to be amazed by it. I think,
yeah. I was hearing some stuff too about, some extremely large lithium, deposits, were found in the US as well recently. So there's probably going to be some information coming out about that. Like it could be the largest deposit of lithium in the world. And so,
what?
Take that, South America.
Yeah, yeah. So whatever fear people have of running out of lithium is, we've already kind of talked about it, but yeah, it's completely unfounded. The other ones, nickel and cobalt and all those ones are probably going to be the more scarce ones. But yeah, so, you know, just more prevalent than ever. And then, you know.
Recycle your batteries too.
And then solid state batteries, right?
Yeah.
If and when.
Fingers crossed.
As far as I haven't seen this myself, or I think I just saw a blip of it. I haven't looked into it at all. So please, someone let me know if you guys have seen this at all. But the thing about cobalt, how it's, you know, everyone says that it's so bad to mine and, you know, lithium ion production is destroying the world because of all the cobalt mining and all the stuff. And then you actually look at how you refine oil, and to refine oil, it also requires cobalt, and it actually requires way more cobalt, and that the oil refining industry is actually by far uses the most cobalt. Yeah. Is that true? Or right? I don't know anything about this.
Fully Charged was talking about that. He said that the other day. Robert Llewellyn, he was saying that, like, and I haven't researched this or anything, so I'm just kind of going off of what he said, but not only it's the sulfur, it's the taking the sulfur out of fossil fuels and out of gas. The process of doing that uses a bunch of cobalt, and it actually destroys it. Like, you can't recycle it. Once you do that process, it destroys that cobalt. Whereas at least with batteries, you can pull that cobalt out later on and use it for something else if you need to. That's very energy intensive, sure, but at least it's not completely destroyed.
Right.
Which is what happens in fossil fuel refining.
Hmm. Should we mention this while we're talking about Fully Charged?
Yes.
Do need to talk about that.
Quick shout. I'm looking at consumption of cobalt in the United States from 2012 to 2016 by end use. I don't see that stuff. I see all these kind of metals that it's used in. So super alloys, chemical and ceramic uses, steels and other alloys, and cemented carbides as the main things, which I don't know what any of those things are. So, you know.
Yeah, we might. I'd like to look into that. If someone has some good sources on the difference, at least if you're using cobalt as an energy, you know, in energy solutions, you know, as, you know, lithium ion production versus gasoline and oil refinement. Like, I'd be curious to see that comparison.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, Joe brought up Robert Llewellyn, and guys, guess what?
We gonna do a thing.
Woo-hoo! Yeah.
Come join us live.
Texas was asking for us to come down to Texas and do a Our Ludicrous Future live, and guess what? We are.
Yay!
So, details. We need details.
That's not Texas.
So, put it in the calendar right now. February 1st, February 2nd is Fully Charged Live, and it's coming to Austin, Texas. It's going to be at the Circuit of Americas. We are going to actually record an episode of Our Ludicrous Future right there in studio, and hopefully we will probably bring a full podcasting thing so it sounds good, like how we did it the last time. I know that's always a concern, is like, oh, I don't like live shows because sometimes they sound bad, but we'll get it really good for you guys. I'm also going to do a speech about rocket pollution. What about you guys? Are you guys also doing talks?
I've got like 4 things they've signed me up for, but I'm not sure what they are yet. So I will definitely be there in full force on both days.
Sweet. Joe?
I don't think I've been signed up for anything yet. I need to check in about that.
Tell him. Tell him that you want to talk about cool stuff, neat stuff.
Man, awesome, I could just get up there and talk, you know? That's just what I do.
Just the Joe Scott comedy hour.
Sure.
Yeah. So this will be great.
A whole hour? Jeez.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is really exciting. I'm really, really, really stoked that the 3 of us get to be together again. This is becoming way more of a regular thing.
Yeah, it's like Our Ludicrous Future Live part 2, you know?
Part like 4 now.
Like, well, this is the second one where people can come.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Second one where people, there'll be the 4th time recording together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that's crazy that we went from like none to 4, I feel like, really quick.
And tickets are really cheap. I don't know if you mentioned that, Tim, but $25 to $50 bucks for the full weekend. So
for the full weekend. Sweet.
Pretty reasonable.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it'll be a good time. I know there's going to be some cool cars there. Rivian's going to have some stuff you can check out. Hey, I'm looking forward to that.
If it's at Circuit, what's it called? Circuit of the Americas. Mm-hmm. Does that mean we can actually drive? If I drive my car down there, can I take it on the track?
I don't know.
Or drive a zero motorcycle? Because I do see that in the thing.
You should. So when I've looked at Tesla Corsa, which is, you know, the racing thing they do every quarter, you have to just register. Like, the way that process worked was you have to register with the track first and like go through all these steps and like register your vehicle and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I imagine there ought to be something there for you to do that. You probably just take someone else's, honestly. I'd just fly down there.
Well, I might drive down anyway. You know me.
You weird driving enjoyment person.
I love it. Especially when the car does it for you.
You know that path pretty well by now.
Yeah. Well, I hop on 35 and then say, go. Mm-hmm. It's nice and easy.
You're like, take a left to where the guys coal roll and then head over there.
Yeah, seriously.
And once you get past Dallas, it's just construction the whole way to Austin?
Pretty much. Oh, so what are you guys working on this week?
Joe?
I'm kind of piggybacking a little bit on what I was talking about a minute ago. Monday's video is going to be all about industrial scale battery storage or energy storage. Ooh. So it's going to talk not just about batteries, but also pumped hydro and flywheels and flow batteries, which are really cool and I never really checked out before. So I may have to do a whole video on that eventually.
The gravity battery.
Yeah.
Grab
love that. I'm so in love with that concept. It's just like, dude, and now I know it's not like the fastest thing, but whatever. Like, it seems like, yeah, put some water up in that mountain, cool. When we need to just, you know, open the hose a little bit, energy magic.
By the way, we got absolutely reamed by a few people because that's just literally what hydroelectric dams are.
Well, that's isn't that where you stop a river that's already flowing and create that?
I think it's been done for a long time, and like a, I mean, where you can just pump it and like have reverse pumps to like refill reservoirs.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just kind of like a thing already. We're just, I think that the new thing is that we're scaling it to more local little things and being smarter about it. So
it,
yeah,
it
sorry,
is being
internet.
Used a lot more than I thought it was. There's a lot of it out there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I still love That's it just sweet, as though. Much.
Yeah. It's
yeah, definitely. Definitely. I'm excited for that one. What about you, Ben?
I don't know. I've got to put the studio together.
Cybertruck number 40.
Cybertruck part 5.
Yeah.
Okay, let me see. You go first, Tim. I have a list of things I'm supposed to be doing.
Well, you guys know I was working on that pollution video, and as I tend to do with things, I realized that I've still got a long ways to go. Panicked and was like, I better write up another script quick so I don't have another 4-month gap in my video schedule. So I started writing up a video Sunday night about whether or not Starship should have an abort system. Mm-hmm. Because that's a huge question I get often, and it's a really good topic. And guess what? I finished that script, and it is, ladies and gentlemen, it is 17 pages long.
Good. That's shorter.
So it's a 40-minute video. Yeah, it's a 40-stinking-minute video.
So the short video you're doing in between big videos became bigger than the big videos.
Yes, became over half hour long. I hate myself. But honestly, it turned into a, it's a, the good thing is I at least knew enough about this topic that I didn't have to do tons of research, but I still wanted to find hard numbers on like how many times have abort systems actually been used? How many times did they save lives? How many times could they have been used to save lives? Get into all those statistics. I also get into statistics of early airliners and like their reliability, compare that to like, if we can project, rockets on a similar curve. You know, how soon before they're reliable enough for just normal day-to-day transport. Kind of diving into a lot more than I thought, and definitely comparing it to Space Shuttle, because everyone's like, Space Shuttle didn't have an abort system, and we remember how that went. So then I'm comparing what systems are different about Starship, period, and then still debating whether or not it needs an abort system. And it turned into a... I'm really stoked on this one, actually. I just really hope this one's not too long, because it's long. But I like it.
Your audience loves it, though, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, hopefully.
So I have my list here. I want you guys to vote and tell me what video to make.
Ooh.
Okay. So is there another Tesla truck coming? Piecing together all the clues that we've seen and that are rumored out there, you know, there's no Tesla badging on the Cybertruck. It's not called the Tesla truck. Meaning you can still make a thing called the Tesla truck. And Elon's even stated, oh, yeah, if no one likes it, we're going to do this. But people tend to like it. So I don't know. But that's a rumor mill video, which isn't my normal thing. The other one is a Tesla marketing budget review. And you may say, well, they don't have a marketing budget. However, there are people like me and many others that post Tesla videos. So I wanted to go through, because I had this Python script I wrote a while ago.
That kind of, right?
What's that?
You did a video about that already, kind of, didn't you?
Yeah, but that was specifically about the referral program. But the idea is I wanted to just scrape YouTube and see how many views Tesla gets. Just overall, like a video with Tesla in the title that isn't Nikola Tesla or whatever, right? Like an actual something about Tesla. And so the kind of, yes, Tesla doesn't officially advertise, but they still kind of do. And they, you know, it's funny. Like by not advertising, they open it up to this whole grassroots kind of organic, you know, marketing engine. And I'm just curious to quantify how big that actually is.
Can you please compare that to other car companies, like specifically YouTube? I would love that. Just even things like Lamborghini, you know, and Ferrari, like these exotic companies that do have a lot of like aura about them and probably a lot of people talking about them. But I would be curious what the actual reach is.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was kind of the idea. Just like look at their marketing campaigns, even though they don't have marketing campaigns, because you can put a dollar value to, you know, views on YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Literally.
One of those.
Awesome. Sweet. Well, good luck.
Numbers.
I might need your help on some charting because I'll have a lot of charting in this video.
Yeah. Let me know if that plugin works if you try it.
Sounds good. I will. I'm excited. Hopefully, I'm trying to get my video out, I don't know, by the end of the weekend or something. We'll see, though.
Did you do the space gifts one already?
Yeah.
Okay.
Knock that one out quick. Nice and easy. Sweet. Yeah. Well, guys, see you next week, right?
Yep.
In
our
we lost the future. We can't do this anymore. We forgot how to do this.
We'll see you next week on our ludicrous future.
Hey, thanks so much for listening. If you like what we do and you want to kind of help get it out there, you can give us a nice review on any of your podcast streaming platforms, whichever one you use. That kind of helps get it out there. Also, we do have a Patreon set up, so you can join us there at patreon.com/ourludicrousfuture. You can get your name in the credits, meet a whole other group of like-minded people. It's a lot of fun. We do appreciate it. We'll see you there.